Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Dan, I just got an email, and
you're very upset about this.
Have to react to this, okay. And I need to know what people think, and I need to know if I'm a bad person. But I do not want to donate to your class list. If you're a teacher and you're putting out the list right now as you're getting your classroom ready, starting to think about whatever, I don't want to go to your Amazon list and buy you stuff.
So what you're saying is now that your children are out of high school and headed off to college, screw anybody at that age that needs some stuff.
No, I think that we should figure out as a community, as a society, to pay to put the crap in the classrooms already.
But isn't that what they're trying to do?
No, we should not be making your school supplies, your classroom setup, a GoFundMe. We have lost our mind with begging and crowdfunding and GoFunding our way to everything. It allows the budget creators, it allows the taxpayers, it allows everyone to avoid responsibility for either screwing the teachers or having the classrooms undersupplied or underfunded. I don't blame an individual teacher for trying to solve their problem because I get it. Like, you don't want to buy the stuff. But, like, stop begging the community and your friends and your randos to fill your school with the stuff you need to run a school. I don't want to do it. 651-461-9226. Just a Twitter direct message just sent me off to start the show. But I've had enough of it. So much. And technology has made this so it's easier to ask for help. And again, I'm not mad at any individual teacher for doing what it takes to try to get things done. But I'm mad at parents for not stepping up and supplying their own stuff for the classroom. I'm mad at school districts for spending too much money on administrative oversight or regulations or requirements and not putting that money into the stuff. But I don't want to do it. Let's have a conversation about what you need instead of every August it's holding out the hat. Let's go to Steve and Wyzetta. Steve, I'm nervous to even say it because I don't want to be like I'm anti-teacher or I'm anti-school, but I'm just sick of the begging all the time.
Here, I'm on your side.
Mm. Because I got one before the rest of everybody comes for me, Steve.
Can you imagine if you sent a whole load of Trump pencils to school?
Oh, wow.
Trump 45, 45, 47. Could you imagine that poked the bear so hard?
It depends where the school is. It depends where the school. There might be some where it would be ahead.
No. My wife's a teacher. I'll tell you one thing. If the teacher saw it, they'd be burning them.
It is. The teacher issue and the school issue is what just set me off because I just got a request and it's not the first one I've gotten. But I do think there's this cultural thing where because you have GoFundMes or you have whatever all of these other websites are, you have this sort of. It's so easy. It's almost expected. Like, well, are you going to ask people to help you out? Like, no. Stop asking. Stop asking. Thanks, Steve. 651-461-9226. Mike is up next. Mike, am I a bad person for saying I don't want to go to your Amazon wish list?
Not at all. I feel exactly the same way. My daughter is a fifth grade school teacher in St. Paul, and this morning she sent me her wish list. And she wants me to talk to my friends, and I'm like, no. You know, if the school doesn't provide it and the parents don't provide it, I don't expect her to spend $800 of her own cash to buy the products that the kids need it.
Right.
I don't want to do it either. I don't want to do it. I think you're spot on.
Now, I will give... Now, for example, Mike, my sister-in-law asked if I would donate to the kids' school parent-teacher organization. And I am going to donate to that. It's for my nephew's school. My sister-in-law is on the board. Like, I'm happy to help. I just don't want, like, I'm not going to retweet your Amazon list for your school. I feel for you as the teacher, because it does stink when you think you need certain supplies or you're trying to help kids who maybe don't have a this or that. But to me, it's a systemic failure at that point. And how are we spending our money on the wrong stuff? Maybe we should be spending more money on making sure they've got the supplies they need to get through the day. I don't know. I'm out.
Let's get rid of one administrator and supply the whole school.
Yes. Great. I'm down. Thanks, Mike. Jessica is in Rosemount. Jessica, this was not how I meant to start the show today, but I was just absolutely triggered by about the fifth request I've been getting from people I don't know to do their Amazon wish list.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm a teacher. I'm a middle school teacher in the South Metro, and I understand that, but I'm wondering then what is the societal solution?
Yeah.
What is, you know, as a middle school teacher, I've been teaching for 25 years. I spend well over $1,000 a year on my classroom. The parents aren't stepping up. They aren't giving us the supplies. The administrators have taken away all of our school supply budget lists. I don't even get a stapler. I don't get a pack of pens for myself to correct papers. We have zero budget for our classrooms. Yeah. And I'm not in an impoverished district.
Right.
I'm in a really big district.
Yes.
We can't get rid of administrators because of behavior and discipline issues that are beyond understanding. And so while I do make an Amazon wish list, but it only goes to my immediate family, and it is very, very minimal. It's really small. It's for essentials.
Right.
It is a systemic problem. But I think that when you think about why are people reaching out this way that seems so desperate? Because there is a desperate need.
What do you think, Jessica, when you look at it? Because you're, you know, and my sister's a middle school teacher also.
Yeah.
And I would just say, like, middle school was probably not my best phase of life. So God bless you. Like, that, it's a challenging age group.
Absolutely.
But when you like touch one of those kids and kind of help them, I think there's probably no more pivotal time in life. So I'm just very grateful for what you do. When you look at this and say, like, all right, there used to be a little more budget for supplies or
right.
maybe did we
right.
need what changed? Why is it that parents aren't sending their kids with enough stuff? Is it that school districts are budgeting money in other ways? Is it like more technology, less of the regular supplies? What do you think has happened?
I think it's all of those things. And while, yes, I unfortunately do have a lot of families that they just feel like it's just kind of our job to take care of everything.
Yeah.
Not only are we feeding them, we're providing now every material, we provide the technology that is not taken care of by an abundance of students and families.
Right.
You know, that is the technology is provided. And I'm sure there are some budgeting things that could change as well, but it's a lot of things. It's many things. It's not just one thing. But as an individual teacher who cannot go, you know, to an administrator and say, hey, you know, I need notebooks.
Right.
Our families give what they can, and then we're out. And kids still need. They still need pencils to write. We still need notebooks. We still, you know. And
when
I ask for parents to replenish at the end of every trimester, I don't get emails answered back. And the supplies just don't show up. It's kind of like, well, you guys deal with it. You deal with them all day long. We need you to just take care of it.
Jessica,
And that is hard to say, I'm being truthful.
No, I like to hear it. It's really helpful to understand that, because to me, as someone who, like, you know, we only had two kids, we had two incomes, we were good to go to help out. And so we would help out when those teachers would ask for that sort of stuff. It's a no-brainer. And we also, our kids were sent. It's understandable, I think, if you have people who are in need. If you have people who just think they're so entitled that when you send your kid off to school, not only is school now the teacher, the psychologist, the behavior counselor, all everything that we ask our schools to do now. It's pretty disappointing that entitlement would extend to, like, well, the teacher can figure it out. Like, ugh.
Well, I'll tell you what, there always seems to be enough money for the club sports, but when you ask for school supplies from families, I don't know, but we are not getting the support that we need from our families.
Jessica, thank you.
And I'm more than happy to help the kiddo who has nothing.
Oh, of course. Right. But you shouldn't be helping, like, my kid. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, that's too far.
I'm too, as long as I can, but we do need help. So sorry that it bugs you.
No, it's, you know what? I'm so glad you called and glad that you're listening. Thanks, Jessica. 651-461-9226. Jessica sort of throws out the challenge. What do we do? Because teachers shouldn't be begging through Amazon wish lists. And looking at the text, I'm not alone in saying I'm not going to do it. So what are we going to do? Drive Time, back in a minute here on CCO.
You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now I'm sharing it all. Join me for Unfiltered Talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the time of year. School supplies. I sort of lost my mind about getting those Amazon wish lists from teachers. I'm sure you've had them sent to you as well. And we're talking about how you react to it. Are you happy to help? For me, it's a symptom of a larger problem. Of multiple larger problems. Some of it that we are a culture of holding out the hat all the time because of GoFundMes and wish lists. And so it just seems normal to say, like, well, as a teacher, you're like, I don't want to spend $1,000 on school supplies every year for my room. I get that. So what do we do? Let's go to Susan in Stillwater. Susan, you're on CCO. What do you think?
Hi there, Jason. Great topic. Actually, I agree with the teacher that called in that it is a systemic problem. So who's going to pay for it? It's got to be fixed. But also, as a parent, parents have got to step up, take care of your kids, teach them right and wrong, pay for their school supplies.
Yeah.
Make sure they're in bed at night, not breaking windows.
Right.
You know, just be a responsible parent. These poor teachers, my gosh.
Well, and
they're not responsible to take care of our kids.
And we ask so much today. It's so much more. I mean, I think about when I was a first grader and I came home from school with a pink slip because I threw a piece of bread at another kid. And my mom told me that if I got another pink slip, she would drag me back to school and spank my bare butt in front of all my teachers. And first of all, I believed her. Second of all, she knew exactly that was the thing that would get me to never get in trouble again. And sure enough, I never got in trouble again. I mean, that for me, that was it. Right. Like, but today you just do you have some of that? I'm sure. But like, it's a lot of avoiding responsibility.
And the parents have got step up. It is our responsibility to take care of our own kids. We birthed them. Take care of your kids. It would help the teachers, the police, the neighborhoods. It's our responsibility.
It's really good. Thanks, Susan. Appreciate it. Number of texters pointing out about how much the athletic boosters raise money, doing fundraisers, doing all this other stuff. You wonder, you know, I sometimes worry about when you just have like the PTO. Like I said, I'm going to donate to help my sister-in-law, my kid's former school. But not all schools have the income level where parents can step up and donate that way. So I don't know. I guess I'd rather see it where we figure out how we can divert some money and make sure the teachers get reimbursed on this stuff. Candace is in Mendota Heights. Candace, thanks for calling CCO. You're a social worker, right?
I am a school social worker. And just like the last caller, I think Jessica said it so well. But I want to just comment on a couple of things. Great. As a social worker, how I respond is I work really hard to try to find the money. When I hear that there's organizations that are donating things, I go and pick them up. Even shoes. Many times different churches will give out shoes at the beginning of the school year. I will go and fill up my trunk with shoes and have them available for the students. It isn't just the school supplies. It's the field trips. And nobody's going to leave a child behind on a field trip. So teachers and social workers and engineers, it's everybody in that building. You would be so surprised. The heart that people have to support these young children is amazing. And, you know, even as simple as school pictures, when people can't pay for school pictures, there's a workaround. I won't say it on the radio, but I know what it is. And other teachers and social workers can contact Life Touch and they'll tell you what it is. But I really want to give this message. Sure, we should put more emphasis on the parents should be taking care of all this, but not all parents can, and it's not always their fault. There's a million reasons, and I'm not sitting here as a liberal trying to say, let's do the parents' job, but if you really met one parent and found out why they couldn't do it, I think you would have a better understanding. Yeah. They send their kids to school. They're clean. They're fed. They're ready to learn. But there are things going on. There's unemployment. There's mental health. It isn't because they don't want to.
Well, Candace, I think everyone has empathy for that scenario. But it's a different deal when, like our first caller, who was saying that it's a lot of parents who can afford it and who just think it's the school's responsibility to handle everything. Thank you, Candace. Appreciate it. Great calls, great text. We're going to break in a minute. Rebecca Jarvis from ABC News grew up in Minnesota. She's back here in town, and she's joining us for a nice conversation about the economy. She is the economy and technology and business reporter for ABC News. Rebecca Jarvis next on CCO.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
She is a Minneapolis native, one of us, so that's what's most important. But I am a huge fan of Rebecca Jarvis, ABC News' chief business, technology, and economics correspondent, who is with us in studio. It's so good to see you.
It's so great to see you, Jason. I'm so glad you reached out.
It's been a couple of years since you were in town for like a Minnesota SPJ event, I think, that we're at the same table.
Yes, I'm frequently back in Minnesota to see my family. All of my cousins live here. My in-laws are here. So I get back, but most of the time, they're unfortunately short, quick, consolidated trips. But I always feel good when I'm back in Minnesota.
Now, I did see you posted this morning your live report for GMA where...
We were next to De La Salle and the train...
It was just a generic backdrop, right? Like, it had nothing to do with the story.
Well, part of this story... There were two stories we covered this morning. There was Claire's filing for bankruptcy, which happened, so we ended up covering the story. But we were here already for another story we could talk about, but... of course, the air quality alert came up, and given that sports are impacted by this and outdoor activities, we wanted to be near a football field, and that's how we ended up there. But we also happened to be near a train.
That's right. Yeah.
If you watch the show, you know why I say that.
That's how it goes sometimes.
The train
right?
showed up the minute. Truly, it was complete silence. And you know, we do these things kind of in the middle of the night because GMA is live on the West Coast and then, GMA is right. live on the East Coast and then we're here in the Midwest. So it was complete silence. But of course, a train went by the minute I began speaking.
That's how that goes.
Of
now,
course.
You are in town for a story about a nonprofit, kind of a cool story that'll be on GMA tomorrow morning. Right?
Yes.
Right here on Channel 5 here in the Twin Cities.
Thank you, Jason. Yeah, I'm really excited about this story. It's a story about a nonprofit called the Green Garden Brick Bakery. It was started by young people about a decade ago in North Minneapolis. They grow vegetables and then make those vegetables into treats, sell the desserts, and then they split the proceeds between each other. They're investing in their future. They're putting it in their retirement savings accounts, but then there's also the investment back in the business, and a third goes to other charities that the young people choose. So it's really a win-win across the board.
How did you find out about them, or how did you get the bosses to be like, yes, let's go do this? Really, it's a business story.
Yeah, it's an investing.
It's a feel good story.
It's a feel good story, and my producer Taylor Dunn is here with me as well on this trip, and we are always looking.
If you're watching on the YouTube stream, you can see Taylor sitting on the floor. Like that is.
I love that it's a wide enough shot to see her on the floor.
That's
She's
how
hiding.
This is. You know, producer life, like you dream. Dreamed of working at the network, and now you're sitting on the floor in a garbage radio
studio.
I
have a rule. She always has to be a little bit lower than I am. I'm totally kidding. I'm
well, you're
totally
not,
kidding.
You're not
Taylor
very Dunn, tall.
Taylor Dunn is an amazing producer, and I say that as a joke. She knows how important she is to the whole operation. And her dog, Shayna, frequently joins us on our shoots in New York as well. She doesn't travel. We don't have budget for that. But but we found this story because, first of all, I'm always looking for Minnesota stories. I'm so attached to this place, and I love the people, and I love looking at how Minnesota is doing things smarter, better, differently than the rest of the country. And I'm always in awe of the spirit that takes place here. And also because I cover business and I'm looking for entrepreneurial stuff. I'm looking for things where young people are investing in their community and their future and becoming the solution. I think, you know, when I was a young person growing up here in Minnesota, I worked with a group called the Minnesota Alliance with Youth. And it was always so important to me that young people could be a part of the solution and not just the problem. And I really love that these young people who started Green Garden Bakery saw themselves in that way and put their time where their mouth was. And that's what they've done. They've built this.
So that'll be tomorrow.
On Good Morning America.
Good Morning America.
Channel
Excellent.
5.
Very good. All right. We've done our job. We did the promotion. That's how this goes.
Thanks, Jason.
Rebecca Jarvis is with us. She's the Chief Business Technology and Economics? Economy?
Yes. You can say yes.
Econ?
It's a long title.
Why is your title so long?
Well, I just add another domain of
expertise. That's
how it works.
Instead of a raise, yeah. They give you another chunk to your title.
They've been, ABC News has been a wonderful place to work for. In fact, I've now spent almost 13 years at ABC News. I started when I was 12. It's been the longest run I've had at any place, and it's been a wonderful, truly wonderful place to work for that time.
We just hit, I think, the anniversary. We were talking about this last week on the show, the anniversary of Peter Jennings passing.
That's right.
And when I was in college, I interned at ABC.
Yes.
And interned, the highlight of my summer was that Peter Jennings knew my name. But it led to a conversation about really, you know, the changing role of national network news in our lives. And just in your 13 years, so much has changed, right?
So much has changed. And I think the advent of social media, the way people consume news, the way people get their news, ABC News has really focused on all of that by developing so many different options for people. We have now a new streaming program on Disney Plus in the mornings called What You Need to Know. My friends and colleagues Rachel Scott and James Longman anchor that on Disney Plus. You can get it anytime, but it comes out early in the morning. Obviously, there's Good Morning America and World News Tonight and Nightline and 2020 and This Week with George Stephanopoulos. All the things people know,
right.
But there's so many more ways people can connect with us, can connect with the content and the news that we are working to deliver every day.
I mean, because obviously your podcast on Elizabeth Holmes was incredible and incredibly successful also.
Thank you. It's been, I love...
Because it's different. We both grew up wanting to do sort of traditional journalism. We had no idea what all of the things, how much everything was going to change.
Yeah.
But you seem to adapt. You dig it, I think.
Well, I love it because I think there's, as an entrepreneurial person myself, where I'm always sort of trying to envision what the next thing might be and how I can participate in that, it's been a real avenue for me to do the kind of work I desperately want to do in new ways. And like you mentioned, The Dropout, that was really the first major narrative podcast that ABC News produced. And Taylor Dunn, my excellent producer, and Victoria Thompson, who's not here, the three of us just kind of set out with a blank canvas and were able to report that story out and tell the story in the way we wanted to tell it as a podcast. And I think that's the beauty of these new slash old mediums. Obviously, you could be listening to the radio right now and you're like, well, I've been listening to quote unquote podcasts forever.
Yes, 100 years has been that sort
exactly.
of storytelling.
But it does, I think, as a journalist, and oftentimes young journalists ask me or aspiring journalists ask me what they can do. And I think while there is just more and that can be harder to break through, it also gives a creative, thoughtful, entrepreneurial person the opportunity to build something like you have here, to build a conversation, to build in a new medium, and to do it without any necessarily rules. Although I would say I would adhere to the traditional rules of fact-checking journalism, second sourcing everything, knowing, you know, I cover the economy, so numbers are incredibly important. And from day one, again, Taylor, I'm sure can appreciate this, from day one, I've always... It's mattered so much to me to make sure that the facts are right.
Well, you came back. You came by that honestly.
My mom, Gail Marks Jarvis, Pioneer Press here in Minnesota. I grew up with my mom impressing upon me how important that was, and it was impressed on me when she was in the job before I even said I was interested in pursuing the same path.
As someone in communications and radio now, but journalism, like, my fear is that my kids would want to go into it.
I understand that fear. Get it.
I don't know.
It just looks but the way you do it, if you could just make it look a little less, you could do it a little less in a little less enjoyable way, then maybe they wouldn't want to do it. But you just make it look too fun.
It looks too fun. Yes. They don't realize when you put on your business and economy correspondent role and you look at network news or local news, I think the appetite for this is still tremendous, but the business model it's a challenge.
It's a changing landscape for sure, because people can get their information, and they are getting their information from so many different places. If you think about it, there's this pie, and the pie used to be split among a handful of players, and now the players are endless, and there are new entrants every single day.
Which is cool and also horrifying.
Right. It's, of course, there's definitely pros and cons to the whole thing.
Rebecca Jarvis is with us. You know, when you look at the Minnesota scene, we have been the epicenter of a number of business stories around the country. Unfortunately, certainly with United Health Group.
Oh, yeah.
And that just sort of assassination, I think, is really how I think about it. And then... you know, right now we're looking at Target, which is a huge a Fortune 500 company, and there's been a ton of reporting here locally about, all right, what's going on? What is the future of this company? It's very important locally, of course, as you know, because so many, if you live in Minnesota, you know someone who works at Target.
Absolutely.
It's just reality.
And Minnesota is a major place for Fortune 500 companies, Target, General Mills, Best Buy. I did an internship at Best Buy many, many summers ago. Yes, I did. I think it's funny. People will say, well, how's the traffic in New York? How does it compare to the traffic in Minnesota? And I'll say, well, if you're trying to get on 394 during rush hour traffic between Northeast Minneapolis and Eden Prairie, good luck.
Yeah, that is, I'll take
that's
the subway.
That's why you bike. That's why you're on a bike, Jason.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. When you look at, you know, and not necessarily Minnesota, but when you look out there in the sphere that you cover, are there characters that you think, you know, leaders or up-and-coming people where you think, okay, we should keep an eye on these folks. These are the most interesting people or the more fascinating people that cross your mind.
I will say for me, in this particular moment, it's not a single person that I'm focused on, but I am heavily focused on artificial intelligence and how that is reshaping both businesses, our economy, our lives, our day-to-day. And I think we've only just scratched the surface there. I did an interview with the CEO of OpenAI, Sam Altman, almost 2 years ago now when GPT-4 was released. Well, they've just released GPT-5. It's faster. He describes it. I was on a call with him last week, an ABC News journalist, and he described it as PhD level in terms of the kind of interactions you can have with it. And that is reshaping everything from healthcare to writing to coding and something. I mean, even just this idea, 10 years ago, it seemed like if you told somebody what to study in college that was a sure bet to success, coding was it.
Yeah.
And now you have machines.
Everyone getting laid off, the response was like, well, learn to code. You'll make a six-figure salary.
Right. And now you have machines that can do it faster than any human being can.
You're talking to the dad of a NYU junior majoring in computer science. I'm glad he has two more years so he can really learn more about AI and that programming before he has to find a job.
And I think college students will continue, no matter what their domain expertise is, they'll continue to learn AI. And I think my advice to people, because people are frequently saying, well, what should I do? It is, I understand the fears. And there are, I mean, there's like the existential side of it, but you have to get comfortable at least with understanding what the technology can do. And it can, of course, I don't mean to diminish what some of the big questions are. They absolutely are there, but it can also help do certain fundamental tasks in your day-to-day and make it faster and easier. GPT-5 can interact with your Google Calendar, for example, and it can tell you, oh, it makes sense to do this at this time. And it, in some ways, operates like an assistant in your pocket. It can help you respond to emails and write.
Plan a vacation.
Last summer, my whole summer vacation, my family's vacation to Savannah, Georgia, was planned because of ChatGPT. We did the whole thing there.
Did you do a story on it then?
I didn't do a story.
That'd be a good story.
I know. Like, we could have wrote off the vacation.
Imagine living your life and not turning it into content.
That's right.
I'm proud of you, Rebecca.
But it's true. That's the other. But I do think your point leans into something else, which is there are two critical things, I believe, at this moment. First of all, critical thinking is imperative, and we cannot allow ourselves to become complacent about that. We have to understand how things work. And in some ways, in the way I liken it, I did a fifth grade project here in Minnesota on Pablo Picasso. And one of the things that stood out to me from that project, and it has stayed with me ever since, is that he didn't start with cubism. Cubism is the, you know, those are the Guernica and the things that we sort of remember about him. But he started like a set of training wheels, painting things true to life before he started mixing it all up. And I think in that same way, to me, it's very, very important for our thinking to continue, for us to learn the basics of things. You have to know that 2 + 2 = 4, even though a machine can tell you that 2 + 2 = 4, and you have to understand why and how that works. And I spend a lot of time with my own, my daughter's 6 right now. My son is 20 months, and we're not quite there yet. But even with my daughter, I try to really reinforce that kind of thing with her.
That's cool. Rebecca Jarvis, I know you have to go, but before you go, I learned today watching you on Channel 5 that you were a croissant fanatic. I did not know this about you.
I'm glad that Google did not unveil that reality, and I was able to share it with the Minnesota Live team, Megan and Chris. They were great to chat with today. Yeah, I love croissants. I have my favorite spots in New York.
Right.
I don't have favorite spots here in Minnesota. Yeah. Do you have spots?
Well, I gave you two. Okay. I said Black Walnut Bakery.
Yes.
And Diane's Place in Northeast Minneapolis.
And those Northeast is where I grew up, so I got to get back there.
Diane's Place. And she was just featured in the New York Times for this sort of creation, really, of Hmong fine dining type cuisine in Minnesota. So
outstanding.
She's a great one. Two great women who are awesome croissant makers.
Okay.
Awesome laminators, as they call it in the baking world.
That's so great. Yeah.
Awesome to have you here.
Thank you, Jason.
We'll all be watching Channel 5 tomorrow morning for GMA.
Thank you.
To see your story here. Thanks, Rebecca.
Next time we eat croissants.
Let's do it. Next time I'm in New York, you can take me to your favorite croissant place.
Perfect.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.